I never knew the story was as big as it was. I knew it was big, but I didn't know it was... I didn't know it was that big. If I was competing today, I could tell you who my peers would be, right? My peers would be Michael Phelps, LeBron James. And so I see where they are. And so only now do I realize, okay, that's where you were.
That's Lance Armstrong, the superstar cyclist, cancer advocate, and in the eyes of many, the poster child for doping. The new 30 for 30 film Lance traces his rise and very public fall. Today, director Marina Zenovich joins us to talk about what it was like to interview an athlete who many warned would try to manipulate the process, and what she makes of Armstrong's remorse or lack thereof. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Monday, May 25th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon.
Lance Armstrong, I knew who he was. I didn't really think anything. That's one of the good things about documentaries when you end up making something and you kind of come to something cold and it's not your world. So you're kind of like an anthropologist coming in and kind of sussing everything out and trying to make sense of it.
Marina Zenovich is a filmmaker based in Los Angeles. She directed the two-part documentary Lance, her second film for ESPN's 30 for 30.
I knew his story. I knew he was from Texas. That's about it. I went to Austin and met him. And, the whole film was kind of originally constructed around the trial, the U.S. Postal Service trial that was supposed to happen in February, March of 2018. We weren't going to get access to the trial, but we thought we could film with Lance. But then they ended up settling.
So you decided to interview him during the settlement proceedings instead. And your first interview was in D.C. where they were happening. What was it like?
It's a funny story because we set up in a hotel outside of D.C. and we're all set, ready to go. You know, we didn't know what time he would be there, but we thought it would be like 1 o'clock. You know, hour by hour goes by, he's not showing up. He's stuck in this mediation. So we ended up breaking down, grabbing an Uber and going to the courthouse or whatever government building he was in and waiting for him until he was done. And literally, he didn't come out until like 9 o'clock at night. It's kind of a crazy way to start. And so the first time I interviewed him was in the car.
Man, I never would have imagined I would have settled for that, but I'm happy that I did. So basically what it means is we won't spend the month of May here. So I just got a month of my life back for $5 million.
I don't know why he decided to do this, but I do know that with the postal case coming to an end and then ending by being settled, I think in the trajectory of his life, this was like the turning of a page for him.
So Marina, we just saw the first installment of Lance and you kind of opened with a bang. I mean, you ask him outright about the doping at the very beginning.
The first time you ever doped, how old were you?
wow, straight into that.
In doing the interviews and dealing with Lance, I just kind of wanted him to know where I stood, that I was going to pull no punches, that I, you know, it's kind of like you were willing to go here and we're going there.
I want to go back to you beginning fairly confrontationally, because often when we do these types of interviews, we work up to the confrontational stuff. Were you concerned at all that you would alienate not only him, but, you know, the other cyclists who you asked the same question to?
Well, I never see myself as confrontational. I see myself as being direct with a smile. It's really a great career for people who are really direct. You know, a lot of people don't like people to be direct, but I love being direct. My mother was incredibly direct. She's European. Lance is incredibly direct.
You also start with people warning you not to trust Lance Armstrong.
The talk out there is that this is Lance Armstrong's effort to resurrect his reputation and that yours is going to be a fairly sympathetic portrayal.
It would be hard for me to believe that Lance won't try to shape any narrative about him, including yours, including anyone he deals with.
Tell me about that.
Well, a lot of people I approached were hesitant to speak, and they wondered whether Lance was behind the film, whether he was producing the film, whether he was getting final cut of the film. So it was something that I felt I had to kind of let you know from the beginning that I knew that everyone who was watching this was maybe going to think that he would be trying to sway me. So we decided to include that just to let you know I'm in on it.
So you interviewed him 8 times over the course of many months. What were those interviews like, and did your style change at all over the course of that?
My style didn't change. I think what changed was that we kind of got to know each other a little bit. So I think there was a relationship that was developing, which always happens on films. We learned early on that he was better in an interview if he had exercised before the interview. So that first interview, he didn't exercise. And the second one, we first filmed him swimming and then running. And then we had this amazing interview. And my DP, Nick Higgins, said, you know, I made a film about ballerinas, but he said, you know, it was exactly the same thing. Like, they'd be horrible unless they'd worked out. Not that Lance is horrible, but it's just like that these incredibly physical people need to do their thing before they can kind of open up emotionally.
My mom said to me, why don't you join the swim team? And I was like, well, I don't know how to swim. And 12 is late to join the swim team. I had to swim with the 6-year-olds. It was awful. I didn't quit. It was, and I never wanted to quit. I never came home and like, Mom, this is embarrassing. I'm swimming with 7-year-olds. I'm 12. If I do quit, then I don't start doing triathlons and I don't get on a bike.
So, you know, knowing that, we made sure he got his exercise ahead of time and then he was there and available. I think for him in the end, he enjoyed the questioning. He enjoyed the pushing. This is someone who's been through a lot of therapy. So, and he told me as much on the last day. He said, you know, you think that I don't like this, but I do. I think Lance is in process.
He comes across as pretty game and open, but were there things he didn't want to talk about or didn't agree to answer?
No, I mean, he told me everything, nothing's off the table, ask me anything you want, which was incredibly liberating for me. He would never say that's enough or anything like that. He would let me go. He'd try to get me off topic. I'd try to go back. It was a lot, but I loved every minute of it, even though it was hard.
What part of it was hard?
I just think Lance Armstrong is someone who there have been movies made about, fiction, nonfiction. There have been books written about. Like, I knew that I had to make something utterly compelling. You don't want to deliver something uninteresting. He's incredibly charismatic, you know, Does that make him a good or bad person? It doesn't matter. We're delving into who he is, why he did what he did. I could never make this movie and have him say, well, you can't ask me about that. So the reason it was hard was that it was trying to get it out of him.
I can never be honest about this because all of this goodness will come crashing down.
I did not want this project to end on the last day. My DP was saying, that's it. That's a wrap. That's a wrap. And I'm like, no, no, I want more. I want more. Just because it's, you know, going into someone's life and their motivations and are they lying? Are they telling the truth? Why did they lie? Who did they hurt? And what was very interesting to me was seeing how different people in the story, how some had made peace with it and some hadn't.
All right, after the break, let's talk about what we learned in the first installment and what's to come. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Marina, throughout the film, Lance is fairly candid about everything he's gone through, but he doesn't really express straightforward regret. I feel like I had to add a caveat there. Do you think he's taken responsibility for his actions?
I think that he has taken responsibility for himself as much as he can at this moment. And I think it changes at different moments. So I think that it's like a firing squad. My God, people want blood. That's why we kept the finger cutting scene in. I said, people want to see him bleed.
No, it's a spoiler. It's a lot. Why do you think that is? Like, what do you think it is about him and his story that inspires so much ire?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. But, you know, in the cycling world, it was an open secret. So I talked to cyclists and they're like, everybody knew. Everybody knows this is going on. Why is no one doing anything? Why is no one doing anything? I think what makes people so angry is they feel that he betrayed them.
You're talking about people who don't know him, people who just bought into him.
People who bought into him. I mean, there are so many different levels. You have the people who he bullied. Then you have them trying to stop him, trying to stop the lies. And then they're being shot down or sued or spoken about disparagingly. Then you have the people who he's just this hero. I mean, you have to remember when this took place, it was all kind of around the Iraq War and Lance Armstrong was the American hero. And I mean, and that's what we try to show in part one is just like this incredible rise of this gorgeous athlete who overcame cancer. I mean, so it's what was interesting in talking to people was that so many people felt betrayed. I think most of it had to do with the lying. I found that people who anyone who had a connection to cancer, who for them, he was really a guiding light, a beacon of hope. Then what comes into it is the fact that they think that he used cancer as a way to continue lying. I mean, it's like it couldn't get more Shakespearean. Since so many people think they know the story, but I think given the fact that it's been, what, 7, 8 years since his epic fall, like, I think people will come to it with a different view of what happened and try to understand him a little bit more based on what we show.
One of the aspects of part one in particular that I found so fascinating was what you showed about the world of cycling itself, how it's this very unique sport or ecosystem with a very unique culture. It's individualistic, but there are teams. What was it like for you delving into that culture, and how did it inform Lance's story?
Well, Lance was always the American, you know? It was important to me to show cycling as a European sport. I wanted to go to Europe and interview different cyclists. I wanted to have different languages spoken. I wanted to show that Lance, you know, kind of big, brash Texan Lance went in there and acted like an American. But it was very important to me to kind of set up cycling for people who don't know what it is and where it came from and what it means to Europeans and the Americans coming in. I think someone said, you know, Lance always seemed more like a football player or a, you know, like an American type of athlete as opposed to a cyclist. And I mean, you can tell when you interview cyclists, they're all kind of, most of them are kind of quiet and keep to themselves. They say so as much in the movie. And then you have Lance. I mean, he's just different from them.
In cycling in general, I think you'll realize that most of the guys, it's such a hard sport that most people are, there's not too big of egos that are involved.
And what about Lance?
Lance? That's good. Then you have Lance.
I mean, he is an alpha.
Episode one really tracks his ascent as an athlete while also laying bare the aspects of his personality that alienated others and ultimately played a role in his downfall. But did you get a sense that those personality traits also contributed to his success and his stardom?
Oh, God, totally. He never would be the champion that he was if he wasn't that ruthless kind of stop at nothing to get what he wants. That goes, those two goes hand in hand.
And finally, the last thing I'll say for the people that don't believe in cycling, the cynics and the skeptics, I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry you can't dream big, and I'm sorry you don't believe in miracles.
And I don't understand why a lot of people don't understand that. Yes, he went too far, but I don't think you can be top of your game and be a nice guy. I think it's very hard.
I'm not comparing Lance Armstrong and Michael Jordan, but everything you just said is exactly what we've all been saying about Michael Jordan after the Michael Jordan documentary as well. We're coming off of Last Dance where we had 10 episodes. Did you watch that
before? Right. I did. Yeah.
Can I ask you, watching Jordan, were you thinking about Lance at all?
Of course. How could I not? I think about Lance when I work out.
That's actually probably a good idea.
I know. I actually have my Sundance Lance poster right by where I work out. And when I do, I see his face looking at me going, come on, you can do it.
I think one thing that's very clear in the first half of this is how much myth-making in general factors into Lance's story and how we build up great athletes generally. But I think the question of who's responsible for that is an open one. You know, examining Lance's rise and just how much mythologizing went into it, who do you think was responsible for that?
The culture. His stepfather, his mother, him, coaches. But I do want to say that I find myself in this position where I can hear the haters going, oh, she's defending him. She was suckered in by him. I can't speak for him, but I feel like he wanted to try to make sense of everything. We're all trying to make sense of our stories.
It's interesting to me that you say, or you sort of think perhaps some people might find it sympathetic, because having seen the whole thing, I did not feel that way after watching it.
Yeah, well, part one, the rise is softer than the fall. The fall is hard. The fall, it's painful, and it's, you know, I wanted to get behind it and see, like, why did he go on Oprah and whose decision was that?
Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
You know, I love going into a moment and kind of, you think you know the moment, but you want to know like the backstory.
I think the question of redemption is an interesting one, because I'm sure a lot of people believe he wants it, he craves it before this film. You know, I mean, it's something he's probably wanted for a while, but what do you think it would take for him in the, you know, in the eyes of the public?
I mean, you have to go on. And kudos to him for, you know, being in therapy and trying to figure all this out after all the ugliness and kind of facing himself in the mirror. You know, he's 48 years old. I mean, he's young. And he has the rest of his life ahead of him.
So the film premiered in January at Sundance. The subject has seen it. How did he receive his own portrayal?
So I can't speak for him, but I don't think it was easy. You know, it's never easy to kind of be faced with things you've done, or if you feel that they're not portraying you the way you should be portrayed. You know, I feel like if he loved the film, I wouldn't have done my job properly.
Thanks so much, Marina.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, how the NHL is skating closer to a return. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. As the major sports leagues continue to work on their plans for returning to action, the NHL is also moving towards a comeback. It accomplished a big step on Friday when the union's executive board voted overwhelmingly to approve a 24-team conference-based playoff format that would begin sometime this summer. Now it's up to the league to sign off on it. Under the new plan, the top four seeds in each conference, based on the standings when the league froze, are Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, Philly, St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas would all get byes, while seeds 5 through 12 played a round of best-of-five games to qualify for a traditional 16-team playoff bracket. Our Greg Wyshynski reports that the NHL will likely use two hub cities if the playoff format is approved, with Las Vegas a likely favorite and no fans allowed at the games. The decision doesn't mean players are fully on board with a return. While they've okayed the format, there are still countless questions of logistics to be answered. But it does mean the sport got a little bit closer to the goal line. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.